From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of January 2016. It's USDA Report Day. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and those USDA reports with Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. The United States Department of Agriculture tweaked the ending stocks numbers for both corn and soybeans a bit lower this morning, down 48 million bushels to 2.355 billion for corn, down 60 million bushels for soybean, now stands at 420 million. We'll discuss that with Dan and then turn around and look at the impact on the cash grain market with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll take up the ever-important weather forecast in South America. Argentina is a bit tricky at this point, says Mike Tenora, T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing very, very well. So the question here for the afternoon is, did the change in what USDA reported this morning have more of an impact on the marketplace than the weather in South America, which continues to show rainfall not only in Argentina, but in parts of Brazil that might be ramping up for the harvest season?
Well, I suppose you could probably argue those probably till the cows come home, but I think fact is fact, and the fact that USDA's soybean number came in much smaller, and the carryout, even though it's still above 400, we went all the way down to 420. I think that's probably a more important number in the movement of the price of soybeans, and I think the weather issues in South America was probably more secondary, and that maybe just added a little fuel to the fire. But I think the way the market performed here today, I mean, beans came out of the chute or roaring after those numbers were released, and then corn went lower. And I think that was initially spread unwinding. The soybean bear has not had a good 12 months. Soybean bears keep wanting to sell soybeans and buy corn, sell soybeans and buy corn. And when that report came out, even though we still have adequate supplies, the market has to react to a drop of inventory. And that is what kind of fueled that sharp run up in soybeans. And then corn went lower initially, and then it was able to finally get its bearings that if soybeans are going to go this much higher, then maybe we're going to buy more acres of soybeans in the U.S. and less corn acres. And then corn acres, I think, were able to, you know, catch that wind. Wheat futures, basically the lowest winter wheat plantings since, what, the turn of the century or some crazy thing like that. That provided underlying support to the wheat market. So that was, I think, got everything, you know, to close higher. Of course, beans are the big leader. And, you know, here we are back to, what, 1050 type beans. And, you know, that tells you the farmers don't have any beans. They followed all these market advisors and grain company advisors that told them to sell them at $9. Because that was a profitable sale last year, and here they are still at $10, and then they've been selling $10 beans because that's profitable. I just beginning to wonder if those $10 bean sales won't turn into those $9 bean sales that was done a year ago, that we may end up going higher. That'll depend upon probably that South American weather. If you get weather problems in South America, and a weaker dollar, and I do think the story of 17 is going to be a weaker dollar. I think the story is going to be strong demand for U.S. commodities, and I guess I kind of still want to be friendly. I know the last time I talked, I was friendly, and then everything went to hell in a handbasket on Friday, but now we've come back. And now soybeans are in good position to close out the month with a monthly reversal to the upside. Corn futures are in good position to follow through on their outside month to the upside posted during December for the month of January. So I think the sideways to higher trend basically continues, and that may be the case as we go on into the first part of February, and then we'll know a little bit more about what's happening in South America.
Well, let me go through some of the numbers as they did come out from the United States Department of Agriculture. We'll start with the crop production report. There were some changes there, as you well know. Corn production now at 15,148,000,000, down 78 million bushels on a yield that dropped 0.7 of a bushel from 175.3 this month to 174.6. The ending stocks for corn now at 2.355 billion. That's 48 million bushels lower than it was last month. And the average cash price, according to USDA, for the marketing year is $3.40. For the soybeans, they now put the crop production at 4.307 billion bushels. That's down 54 million bushels from last month. They dropped the average yield by 0.4 of a bushel to the acre from 52.5 to 52.1. That puts the carryout at 420 million bushels, down 60 million bushels from last month, and the average market price at $9.50. Wheat futures average market price, by the way, at $3.80. And a couple of the other numbers, the winter wheat stocks, or winter wheat seedings, we're out. They say 36.6 million acres of winter wheat have been seeded. That's down 2.852 million from last year. And as you mentioned, one of the lowest around. And then on the grain stocks, as to where they happen to be, on farm storage for corn at 7.6 billion as of December 1st, 4.7 billion off the farm for a total of 12.3 in the bin December 1. Soybeans at 1.3 billion on farm, 1.56 off, total at 2.895. Those numbers, are well along with the wheat number, were all higher than they have been in the previous year, about 44 million bushels more this year than last year on December 1st for corn, 5 million more for soybeans, wheat, 68 million bushels more. So all those numbers are in play. Kind of sets the tone, Dan, I suppose, for what we'll have for the next, I don't know, couple of months until we get to the end of February and finally to that acreage report as it comes out from the United States Department of Agriculture on March 30th. And then, of course, as we talked about all the things that are happening here, you've got an Argentine crop that is suffering from really not very good weather this year for both corn and soybeans. However, the Brazilian crop's been awfully big. So what are your expectations out of South America?
Well, I think I always kind of view the January final crop report as, you know, the final nail in the coffin of the previous year's crop. Now, I think the market is in a period where about, I call it the BS period. I think you could put out any kind of story you want to put out now, and it could or may not move the market. This is a period of uncertainty now, because the 16 crop's gone. Now we're going to talk about the 17 crop. We're going to talk about acreage mixes. Does today's soybean rally and the lower wheat acres, does that increase bean acres? If so, how much? Does it increase corn acres? How much? If not, if corn, it moves lower. It's also the case with the South American crop. So we're in a window here where just about anything goes. You could put out any kind of story now and spin it any way you wanted. So there is no doubt if we have favorable weather, we're going to be in deep soup. And I think, I know farmers are big fans of crop insurance, and I understand that. The bankers really love crop insurance because that guarantees their loan. But wheat is the first casualty of crop insurance. And the reason I say that is that wheat used to be a crop that you could collect a crop insurance payment on, but now we've got to the point that we've got such a burdensome supply of wheat on hand that we have extremely wide basis levels. So the crop insurance payments don't come about like they used to because of the wide basis levels. So the futures levels, futures don't vary very much. So there's not much chance of a big revenue payment. Now, what's going to happen now is that is going to feed on over into corn and soybeans. And we're going to get to the point where crop insurance ain't, there's having a chance of getting a payment from corn or soybeans is going to be real skinny as we go down the road. So I know farmers are big fans of the crop insurance, but crop insurance encourages overproduction. And that's why the grain companies are selling grain crop insurance. That's why all of your seed companies and your chemical companies and everybody in agriculture, they want farmers to overproduce because they can sell more product. They can sell more fertilizer. They can sell more seed. They can sell more machinery. They can everybody. So it'll be interesting to see how the farm bill comes about. But I know crop insurance is one of the big things that farmers like. I can appreciate that. But crop insurance is sending them down the same road high loan rates did back in the 70s and early 80s. And it just leads to overproduction. And, you know, we're going to have to, and you hate to hope for bad weather for the U.S. because that doesn't really help anybody out. Now it does. It helps the ones out that have a crop. The ones that don't have a crop, then, you know, they get behind. But we're back. We're kind of entering that mid 80s area, and we're just one crop away from having some severe price declines in ag commodities, and that's going to be really scary as we go through this 17 crop year.
Send your comments to Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting, Waco, Texas.
Yeah, that's why I moved out of the Corn Belt.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Dan. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, one is the loneliest number. President-elect Donald Trump yesterday announced his nominee to lead the Department of Veterans Affairs, and that leaves the Ag Secretary's position as the last one to fill for the incoming administration. Moving on, the Farmers National Company says 2017 land values are dependent on several different factors the industry may see throughout the year. The Agricultural Landowner Services Company says the direction of commodity prices, interest rates, inflation, challenges in the world economy, weather, and the U.S. tax laws all could change direction of land prices for this year. In the past 3 years, agricultural landowners in many regions across the country have seen a decline in profits, which also pushed land values lower. Land prices remain mixed, though, to start the year, as some regions are seeing prices stabilize. The items the company says will have the most impact on land prices this year are interest rates and commodity prices. Well, the U.S. Grains Council says China, the nation, is attempting to restrict access to the U.S. dried distillers grain market by companies there by subjecting U.S. DDGs to anti-dumping and countervailing duties. Grains Council CEO Tom Slate says the organization is deeply disappointed in the move. The announcement came just 10 days after the Chinese government increased tariffs on imported U.S. ethanol from 5 to 30%. The Grains Council says that move effectively stops market growth for U.S. farmers and ethanol producers. Meanwhile, U.S. farmers also continue to wait for China's approval of biotech corn events, which last happened in 2014. Slate says the protectionist trade restrictions by China are based on false allegations and do not benefit China or the United States. Let's come off the international arena and move to Washington, D.C., where farm groups are pushing hard for regulatory reform as the Trump administration prepares to take office next week. But reform bills now sailing through the House may have a tougher time in the U.S. Senate. The House has already passed, on mostly party line votes, legislation giving Congress greater regulatory oversight and the power to rein in regulatory actions it opposes. One of those bills is even called the RAINS Act, to require Congress to approve all proposed major rules with an economic impact of $100 million or more, and act within 70 legislative days. But before that bill and others get to President-elect Trump's desk for his expected signature, they'll need to pass in the Senate, where National Pork Producers Council spokesman Dave Warner cautions the bar is a bit higher.
You need to have 60 to overcome a filibuster for some measures, this being one, this RAINS Act. So, it will be tough.
Warner argues Democrats with 48 Senate seats should look at the long term and restoring power to Congress to rein in rulemaking over reaches Congress never intended, such as the Waters of the U.S. rule and expansion of the livestock marketing rules. Longtime agriculture Republican Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa says some in the Senate won't see it that way, and they'll use the body's filibuster rules to slow or stop the RAINS Act.
You got to get 60 votes to get something like that through the United States Senate. I think a lot of liberals won't like anything that takes away the power to write regulations, but it's sure going to get a big push for me, I can tell you that.
Warner points out that the RAINS Act, which is supported by the MPPC and the American Farm Bureau Federation, among others, is proactive and not retroactive.
The opposition's coming from the Democrats, yet we're about to start a Republican administration. Wouldn't Democrats in Congress want to take back a little more control from particularly a Republican administration?
And Warner says that's not what MPPC is advocating. What it wants, and what groups like the American Farm Bureau and National Cattlemen's Beef Associations will argue, is that bureaucrats have no authority to extend federal powers beyond what Congress intended. Well, the RAINS Act, the Regulatory Accountability Act, and others are designed to do that if they can get to the new president's desk. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. At this hour on a Thursday afternoon, normally we would talk with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. He's not available, but should be with us at 3 o'clock this afternoon when we record Commodity Week, along with our other panelists, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Our special guest this week to help take a look at those USDA numbers, Arlen Suderman of FC Stone. Commodity Week is our weekly look at the agricultural world. You can catch it online after 5 o'clock on Thursday evenings and right here on these radio stations Friday or over the weekend. Now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenora is here from T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago. Let's get right to it, Mike. We've got some weather in South America that we need to take up.
Well, potentially, and more so in Argentina than Brazil at this point in time. The big issue in Argentina is that there have been some very large rains over the last 3 to 4 weeks. The interesting thing about it is that if you look at rainfall in Argentina from November 1st to the middle of December, it was one of the driest periods on record going back to 1980. Ever since then, though, it's been one of the wettest periods on record. And because of that, we're starting to see excessive wetness and flooding start to show up in some of the topic boards and some of the discussion boards that we see. And we've certainly seen some videos out of Argentina showing extensive flooding in parts of their key corn and soybean area. We can look at our rainfall data and also our satellite data and verify that amounts have been quite high in some of these regions, with several key locations having reported more than 13 inches of rain over the last 30 days. Keep in mind, these are areas that receive similar amounts of rain to what we would see here in the U.S. Corn Belt in the middle of the summer. So if you were to see 13 inches of rain in, say, 20 to 30 days, you'd know what would happen. And we're seeing that in several areas of Argentina. And the reason it's a concern more than anything is because the pattern continues throughout the next 7 to 10 days. We'll see some thunderstorms there tonight, and then especially on Saturday night and Sunday. And so we're going to keep on adding to these totals in some of these wet areas. And that could become a more significant concern as we move forward.
In Brazil, they'll move into the harvest mode in Mato Grosso sooner rather than later. I take it you're concerned a little bit about rainfall there too.
Well, a little bit. The interesting thing about Brazil is that a lot of these areas in the north have been fairly dry over the last several weeks, especially in Bahia, where normal rainfall over the last 30 days would be around 8 inches, and many locations reported no rain. That's a big departure to have to make up for. And even though we will start to see some rains in that state going forward, we don't think we're going to see enough to make up for all these deficits. And that area there accounts for around 5% of first crop corn and 5% of soybean production in Brazil. So a problem in Bahia. But once you get into Mato Grosso, that's where, as you noted, harvesting tends to begin over the next couple of weeks. And even though to this point in time, everything's been going great, all of a sudden, here we go, and we're going to move into a wet pattern with above normal rainfall over the next couple of weeks. So that might limit harvesting rates a little bit for soybeans, but whether or not it turns into a larger issue is very hard to say because this is a wet area and we know how things can change there. But at least in the near term, much wetter going forward.
And finally, here in the United States, it looks like a very ugly weekend for a large portion of the West and the Midwest.
That's exactly right, and clearly one of the larger storms that we've seen in a while. I can't recall offhand seeing the potential for an ice storm of this magnitude across this large of an area. And the real area of concern is in Kansas. That state could see widespread rainfall of 1 to 2 inches, most of that falling in the form of glazing ice. That would be a big problem for Kansas. On the plus side, though, for crops at least, we're going to see so much rain over such a huge area, whether it falls as ice, snow, or just normal rain, is going to entirely wipe out the entire drought for all the hard red winter wheat crop in any lingering areas of dryness for soft red winter wheat. So we're not going to have drought as a topic of discussion beyond Monday.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
You're welcome, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.